This episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me for a very fun show. We go all over the place on this show. First, we talk about some coaching hirings that happened. Joe Brady to the Bills, duh. Brian Daboll, offensive coordinator to the Titans. We also do a little postmortem on the final four losers, the Rams and the Broncos. Nice extended talk there. And then we end it with a couple hanging questions that we have for the offseason. Just two each. Extremely fun conversation with Matt. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I am your host, Nate Tice. Very fun show for you guys today. We're going to be doing a quick postmortem on the two losers of the conference championship round. We talked about the Broncos and the Rams a little bit Sunday night, but we wanted to give them the floor, or, you know, as they enter the floor of sadness, I guess is the best way to put it, but just talk about what they can do this offseason, what are the next steps for these franchises that made it to the Final Four and how they can move on to the Super Bowl next year in LA. Also, biggest questions heading into the offseason we'll be talking about today. Just loose strands that we want to pull at, loose threads that we want to pull at, something that's on the top of our mind that we really wanted to talk about. To help me do that, like every Tuesday, my guy, Matt Harmon. Good to see you, Matt. Weather turning for you a little bit from just a little rain that you got this weekend, as opposed to the huge snowstorms everybody else got. Great to see you though. How you doing?
Good to see you. Yeah, it's cold. That's about it. I finally relented and turned the heater on in my office. It's not a tiny room up here, but it's one room up in my office up here, so it can get a little toasty, especially for a big fellow like me. I'm tend to overheat as opposed to anything else. So I did finally relent and turn the heat on. But you know, I'm soft, notoriously soft when it comes to cold. I don't find any pride or masculinity in being cold. Okay, that there's nothing about that appeals to me. So it is what it is. But you know, I'm excited for this conversation today, because we've got a ton to get into. It's a packed show. So I'm looking forward to it.
It is a packed show. I know. It turned into a kind of an open show to a much more packed show. Yeah, weather-wise, I can't move back from the West Coast. I've said this, not only just the time zones that I get to watch sports in, but just the weather. Vegas right now, it's 52. It's amazing. I love it. And I don't know. You have to drag me kicking and screaming to get me in the cold. I hate the cold. I grew up in Minnesota. I'm not originally from there. So everyone goes, oh, you ski, you snowboard, you skate. I don't do any of it. Don't do any of it. I wish I did, but I don't ice fish. I don't hunt. I don't do any of the things that some people like to do in the cold. I just like to get cooped up, get warm, get toasty, maybe have a little wine, play a board game. That's me enjoying the cold, but that's why I live in Vegas. But before
I'm a cold plunger slash cold shower taker. I do those things.
Well, you run hot. That makes sense.
It's psychotic behavior, but I don't like to sit in the cold. Anyways, nobody cares about my cold showers, but that is
I love a good hot cold contrast though. Hot cold contrast is nice. Yeah, well, you know, a little steam room into the cold, go back and forth. That'll make you feel good. That'll wake you up. All right, enough of the weather talk, because we're in our 30s. We're going to get into the postmortem on those final four teams. We'll get into the biggest questions. But before that, because the NFL does not stop, got a couple coaching hires today, this morning, before we started recording at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 o'clock East Coast time. So I'm sure something else will crop up, as it always seems to when we do these Tuesday shows. But the Bills hired Joe Brady as head coach, their offensive coordinator from the last couple of seasons, quarterback coach before that. He was the OC, infamously the OC for the 2019 LSU team that won a national championship, had the number one pick at quarterback, had two all-pro receivers. I'm sure that helped a little bit with that. Goes on to be the OC for the Panthers, just spam choice routes to CMC, becomes the quarterback coach for Buffalo, and then he usurped, Ken Dorsey. As the OC in the middle of the season a couple of years ago, but promoted to head coach of the Buffalo Bills. I have plenty of thoughts about this, but Matt, I'm curious about what are your thoughts. Are you surprised? What you think about it? What are the next steps for the Bills, et cetera, et cetera? What'd you think?
A lot of different thoughts here.
I got more notes on this than any of our main topics. I got more notes on this than anything else.
I'm sure. I think this could end up being our longest conversation on the show here, just because there's so much to pull apart here about this particular move here from Buffalo. You know, I think when we originally talked about the idea of the Bills firing Sean McDermott with Charles after the divisional round, it was, you know, this probably isn't the right year, quote unquote, to fire Sean McDermott, but I could justify them doing it if they want to do a full scale reset. I mean, not only are they keeping Brandon Bean, which we already joked about and you know, had our fun with on a previous show, now they're just promoting the offensive coordinator a week after, by the way, less than a week after their owner came out and said, and I know you and I think both had fun about this on social media, that the owner comes out and defends Brandon Bean by saying, oh no, the Keon Coleman pick. And look, I don't know this for a fact that Keon Coleman was Joe Brady's guy or anything like that, but it's just the optics of it are funny that part of the defense was that was the coaching staff that picked Keon Coleman. Well, not only were you interviewing Joe Brady, now you've hired Joe Brady, you know, the part of theoretically the coaching staff that wanted the Keon Coleman pick. And just again, that makes it all really kind of funny. But just I have some actually pretty positive thoughts about Brady that we can unpack as an offensive mind and a play call and all that stuff. I do just think directionally what you're saying here is that this was all Sean McDermott's problem, like, and it doesn't really square that Terry Pegula has said ever since he got in front of a mic less than a week ago has really made any sense, or I think squared much with reality anyways. But it just doesn't really square that you said, hey, we fired Sean because we hit the proverbial playoff wall, and now you're just essentially promoting from within. That doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, even if you like Joe Brady as a head coaching candidate or as an offensive coordinator, which again, I generally do like Brady, and we can unpack that. But yeah, just that part of it, my first reaction is it's a little tough to square some of this. But then again, all of it's been tough to square for Buffalo in the last, you know, week and a half.
It seemed like the priority, even just you look at the names that were floated out, who they interviewed and everything, it was making Josh Allen happy and someone that wouldn't threaten Brandon Bean at all. And I think there's nothing wrong with making your quarterback happy. There's nothing wrong. They're the most important player on the team. I get that. Not the only player on the team, but the most important one, especially one like Josh Allen, who is locked in, top three quarterback in the league, and reigning MVP until Matthew Stafford seems like he's going to win it. My issues with the Bills were roster construction and lack of offensive ideas in the passing game. And those two people that are in charge of those two things got promoted. I don't think I need to add to that, but I will. But that's the issue. That those were my two issues with this team. Roster construction and the passing game being very limited and being very... they repeated calls. And there's some intelligence and some, I almost said smartness, as I'm trying to say in an elegant way here. But there is something to repeating play calls. I think sometimes there's a genius to that, where you kind of just repeat a call because the defense is expecting something completely new. It's like, you know, stop it, you know, run it until they stop. It's classic kind of coaching edge. Some people don't follow. Brady kind of does that to a fault. I know the mesh thing is kind of a meme. This is something I'm still trying to figure out. Is that the quarterback wanting that, or is that him just calling it and just going like, this works for us, we'll just find new ways to run it? Who knows? But the problem is we won't find out because both of these guys are still there. Obviously, Josh Allen's going to be there, but Joe Brady now, and he has even more power. He might be a fine head coach. Who knows? Some people end up being a much better head coach than you expect, being worse head coach than you expect, being exactly what you expect. It all comes down to the staff he hires, especially on defense. He needs to hire a new offensive line coach. That's another huge thing. Both of Brady's most successful stops have been with good offensive line coaches. So I'm including the 2019 LSU team and also the Bills teams from the last few years. Aaron Cormier just retired. So he's got to basically build up the whole rest of the offensive staff. Like, and I think, does Joe Brady have that Rolodex to kind of pick those guys? Sean Payton's basically hired all the guys because, you know, Brady was a Saint guy. And the thing is, too, is so the Keon Coleman thing, I know that's kind of turned and it's lost contained. And I've cracked jokes, you've cracked jokes, everybody has, but it's worth talking about a little bit. So if the whole thing was the owner said that was a coach pick, are we saying Sean McDermott had the lead on, he was the lead scout for the coaches on receivers? Because to me, that's just bad process then. So like, this is the thing. This was so funny about picking apart Brandon Bean and the owner and everybody's stories. So that's a coach's pick. Well, no, it's McDermott's pick. So you had McDermott call receiver pick? Well, not Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator who has a receiver background. He wasn't the lead guy for the offensive player scouting. Yeah. If you're going to blame it on the coaches, get your freaking story straight. You know, that's the problem. When you talk, you just like, you let this happen. And it's like, okay, so this, none of this makes sense. Nothing is adding up to exactly what it is, but that's the Bills. That's, we just got to remember what the Bills are. You're going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say Joe Brady played wide receiver at William & Mary, which is about an hour and 45 minutes away from where I live. So, I mean, like, he was the receivers coach at LSU and did that 2019 season in addition to being the passing game coordinator. So this idea that that's another thing, one of the biggest criticisms that the Brady offense gets. And, you know, you mentioned some of the limitations in the passing game. Do you think that's more of that's more of like a design issue, or like you said, the sequencing and the actual play calling of it?
Both. He tries to kind of dress it up, but then there's limitations to what those window dressings are. A lot of the like backfield orbit motions. And that's the thing is when you have more stuff in the backfield, you limit what you get to as far as down the field. And I think some of the sequencing stuff too is like, as soon as they get into the red zone, it's like, okay, here comes the running back leak play. You know, the guy breaking through the line of scrimmage and throwing it back. It's just that even the run game, which I really liked with the Bills, a lot of the under center stuff they got to, the multi tight end stuff that they got to the last couple of years, that felt like more that was the O-line coach in the run game and those coaches putting that together. Because why I say that, a lot of the passes didn't kind of build off of that. Like there's times where you see under center play action, but it wasn't like the run fake was exactly how they run fake or do the same action on a run play. The formations didn't tie together perfectly. So to me, there's a little disconnect there. That happens all the time. You don't have to dress up your play action exactly as the run game is. Just get it close enough. But I did think that a lot of stuff was disconnected. It was like their gun game was their gun game. Their under center game was their under center game. Their personnels were just very much like, so what I'm getting at to like answer your question is that like, I didn't think the sequencing and some of the cohesion of the designs made sense to me over time. These played a lot of big games. I watch a lot of Bills. So maybe I just pick up on this a lot more. But I do think that even Bills fans and anyone that's watched them kind of see some of these limitations. Me and Bill Barnwell joke all the time about how many times they run mesh, which again, there's time and a place to run mesh. It's not that you don't run it. It's just that every big situation, they call it. And if you're a smart defense, it's just teed off on that. And to me, that's just a little scary because now you're kind of getting more insular. You're getting more into, well, Brady and Allen were already doing that anyways. Now who's going to tell them to stop? You know, who's going to come in there and go, stop running that? No one, because now Brady just is to the top now. And Josh Allen is going to have his buddy there. It's like, and that's the thing. Again, he might be better as a head coach and everything, but even like that LSU stuff, like Steve Ensminger, the coach that was there as well, he was the primary play caller. Brady did third downs and red zone stuff, but the run game stuff and all the other stuff, early downs, that was the true offensive coordinator. Brady was just passing game coordinator. It's just funny how the narrative just goes. He gets the Joe Broyles Award, which is the assistant coach of the year in college football. He had the number one pick, Burrow. He had two all pros. He becomes the OC with the Panthers. I joked about the choice routes to CMC, but even Sam Darnold, when he played his best football in Carolina, he had that first month where he was scrambling a bunch and all that. Then he kind of tapered off. And then the next year, he started again at the end of the season. So that would have been 2022. And people have used these stats going like, hey, Darnold was playing better football there. Brady was already in Buffalo. So it's not like Joe Brady can claim that either. So Sam Darnold got better without you. Of course, Joe Burrow looked good in college. He was the number one pick and he wasn't even the primary play caller. And then now he gets to work with Josh Allen. I don't know. These things always worry me. It's like, who's he learning from? Like where did it get tough for him? And then he had to figure out a way to design these plays. He can just hit the Josh Allen button over and over. And we're going to get to the other Josh Allen play caller in a second who I have the same issues with. But I don't know. They said they want an offensive-minded head coach. That was their plan. But their final candidates were Joe Brady, Brian Daboll, and Davis Webb. I mean, come on. Like, that's not casting a wide net. And then the Anthony Lynn interview, which is just laughing in the face of the Rooney Rule. I don't know, man. It's performative. This is just what they wanted. And it's, I don't know. I'm not saying this is going to be a nightmare. This could be a mess. It all depends on the staff he hires. He might blow us out of the water with a cool defense coordinator hiring. Something like that, but I don't know. It's to me just feels very lazy and very like Bean and Allen got the guy they wanted, and that's because he's not going to butt heads with them, and that can work, but I don't know. The NFL sometimes with button heads and, you know, iron sharpening iron, sometimes that friction can lead to better things. And right now they kind of feel like they're taking the easy way out with everything, which is kind of a little frustrating, I think, from an outsider's perspective. But any closing thoughts on this? Because I think I got most of mine out.
I was going to say, I think I kind of am of two minds with this, because I do agree. Yep. And this was on my radar right away with when, you know, they had like the Davis Webb thing was being floated. And if we're being honest, I think Joe Brady was promoted from quarterback coach to offensive coordinator, you know, in part because Ken Dorsey was like, to me, it was a lot of the same old Brian Daboll stuff, and they needed to move away from that. But I also think that was because Ken seemingly is a little bit more of a different personality than Joe Brady. Let's put it at that.
Yes.
Different personality than Joe Brady.
Yes.
And then I think that Brady was just, he was Josh's guy. They had a good relationship. That's probably why he got the OC job to begin with. And now that's probably why he's gotten the head coaching job. And I don't love that as a process. I said, I would rather have not an outright combative, but a little bit more friction based relationship between my head coach, play caller, and quarterback. That being said, my defense of Joe Brady as an offensive mind and like as more of a play designer, maybe I like him a little bit more in the passing game than you do. I just think that the passing game specifically in Buffalo these last few years has just been so limited by what the personnel is. And I think it's really debilitating. I mean, again, Josh Palmer was their big, you know, free agent signing this offseason. He couldn't even cut it as the Chargers wide receiver three. Like, they summarily moved on from him, and that's a team that still needs wide receiver help. And they kind of planned on him playing the most snaps at the outside receiver position. The Coleman thing was just such a whiff. And I think this is an offense based on what I imagine Joe Brady wants to be in the passing game, which that I go back to that 2020 season with the Carolina Panthers, which was a really successful offensive season for them, all things considered. DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Curtis Samuel, and Mike Davis all had over 1,000 yards from scrimmage that season, and the owner blew it up because Teddy Bridgewater was their quarterback, and he played exactly like Teddy Bridgewater you'd expect Teddy Bridgewater to play. And then Brady, I think, was scapegoated next year by Matt Rhule, who, you know, definitely didn't have his hand in the offensive, in what was going on there in that 2020 season. And again, the 2020 version of those three wide receivers I just rattled off there, Moore, Samuel, and Robbie Anderson, are a lot better than anything Buffalo has had these last couple of years. So to me, I think that you can get a lot out of this offense, especially when you do have an X receiver that actually wins on a route by route basis, which is, DJ Moore is not a perfect player, but he was a good fit in this offense because they kind of had him run three routes. A lot of, like, Michael Thomas ran, you know, a small handful of routes, and he was more of a full field receiver than the slant boy moniker gave him. But this is where that offense kind of comes from. It kind of comes from that, like, Sean Payton, New Orleans Saints DNA. And I think if they get more players that can actually fit into that, I think the offense can take a step forward. In addition to the fact that I like a lot of what Brady, and maybe it was all Aaron Cromer, I don't know, it's always tough to split these things up, but I like a lot of what they've done in the run game. I like them going to jumbo personnel, you know, when before everybody else started doing it this year, they were kind of the first ones doing it. And then, like, they zigged when everyone starts zagging, and they get Jackson Hawes involved in the mix there, but they can't really get their first round tight end because he's kind of a fake tight end. It's just, that's where you get to the personnel stuff with this Buffalo team, and it gets really naughty. Of course, the guy who's in charge of personnel was promoted, so again, that's where it gets all naughty in the process of it all. But I don't know, I generally do like Brady, and I think that it's hard to hold a lot of what the passing game has felt like against him, because again, in my opinion, it is the players. Even a lot of things that people say was like, well, Stephon Diggs started to not be as productive when Brady took over. I'm like, Diggs started to decline in that 2023 season. Like, the decline began in that season, and it's just difficult. I know he's gone on to obviously be a productive and useful player for two other teams. Yeah. He won the damn Super Bowl here,
but he's not number one.
But he's not a number one.
He's a glorified one for the Patriots. Yeah.
And it's tough politically, and I know this because I've talked to people, you know, involved in this. It's tough politically to, like, stop treating your elite number one receiver like an elite number one receiver when he is still on the same roster, you know? So it's just, I think that was more of the push and pull than anything, more of just like a personality based stuff than Brady's scheme, like as if he took over. It's like, the first thing I got to do is take the number one receiver out of the offense. I think that he was already a player in decline at that point, especially working down the field as a separator.
And you look how they use their receivers. And that, I agree with you. This is not going to bottom out. Josh Allen's too good. And this offense is above board. That's the thing. It's not like this is it's going to be atrocity. So that's the thing. It's like, I don't think the Bills are just going to fall off. I just think that's more like it's lack of, you know, it's not inspiring. I think it maybe is the best way.
Totally.
It's like, you want to see the firework factory, and I get that. Speaking about Diggs, this is also like my theory of like, be wary of taking a receiver early in the draft, is it's really hard to convince your top 10 pick to block and do the dirty work. You know, it's why would I do that? I'm number 6 overall pick. You didn't draft me. I'm here to catch touchdowns. And that's something I've seen over the years. And if you look at all the Bills receivers, Khalil Shakir, Palmer, where they signed him, the tight ends, all these guys, they do Mac Hollins last year. They did all the dirty work stuff, like, you know, to block all the bubbles and flats and everything, the 100 ones of those that they ran. And that's, again, that stuff was working. This offense has had a lot of good performances. It's just that there's some moments, like there's some stuff against the blitz that was weird this year. And again, is that O-line? Was that Josh Allen? Was that the scheme? Don't know unless you're in the building, but it did crop up to me. Josh Allen took more sacks. He had a higher pressure to sack rate. I also thought just some scheme stuff where they were just, I brought this up like 100 times, but the Falcons game was the one where I thought they really got exposed for kind of their lack of offensive diversity and maybe lack of adjustments. And that's where I had some more concerns with it. But again, the floor is pretty high because, again, if you just kind of keep this going, you're going to have a top 6 offense pretty locked in. They do have to sign their offensive lineman, figure out some new spots there. That is another thing that's going to bring up with them. Or, you know, they have the free agents. They have some cap space stuff to work out. They have defensive holes too. So I think it's really how he fills out the rest of the staff is going to be like my complete answer on this. But I just do think if Bills fans are a little frustrated by this, I kind of understand because it does feel like, they got a guy to not butt heads with the quarterback and the GM, which is can be good, but also can be interesting. Also, Bills definitely, and I heard this through the grapevine, heard this from people in the know, also saw it publicly. Bills had interest in Clint Kubiak. They couldn't interview him because they fired McDermott after the divisional round. Way to go, guys. And I think I still think Vegas is the lead to land Clint Kubiak anyways. So it's I think that was kind of like a done deal anyways. So this is kind of the way to do it. Another person that I was interviewing for this Bills job, the former Bills offense coordinator, was Brian Daboll, who got hired by the Titans as offensive coordinator, contingent that Brian Daboll does not get the Raiders head coaching job, which I think is Kubiak's anyway. So, all right. My only question I have for you, Matt, who's going to tell him that Cam Ward is not a runner and Cam Ward you can't use like a battering ram whenever things get hard? That's really my only question I have about this. But what do you think about Daboll, Titans, his pairing with Cam Ward, and just everything going on in Tennessee right now?
Yeah, Cam Ward, 6'2", sub 220, at least what he's listed. So we definitely got to slash a large chunk of the Brian Daboll playbook out of here. It is always funny when it's like, well, he got the best. He's like, he got the best out of some of these quarterbacks. Yeah, by using them like, what's the, like, Gronk, you know, Grond from Lord of the Rings. I mean,
Gronk.
So I don't know about that. But it's funny that when we talked about Robert Saleh getting this job, you and I both assumed he would just pluck somebody from the Shanahan tree and went way off that with the Brian Daboll thing. I certainly did not see that coming. I do think some of the shotgun spread stuff is a good fit for Cam Ward. I think he probably is going to be comfortable in that world. So I do think there's some appeal to the Daboll part of it. I don't know. I'm like interested to see what Daboll looks like back as an offensive coordinator, because to me, I just don't think he handled the juggling play calling and head coaching very well, and so I am a little curious to see what he looks like back in just this one world. So yeah, that's kind of my reaction here. I'm open to this being interesting, and I think some of it does fit Cam Ward pretty well.
Yeah, I don't hate this as much as maybe my first gut reaction. I was like, oh my god, like, you're gonna really give Cam Ward to this guy? Like, oh god. And then as I've kind of marinated, I like how you just said the kind of spread passing game stuff that does match Cam great. Like, Daniel Jones is one good year with Daboll before they re-signed him and he regressed, and then he had a better year in Indy. not under Daboll, is that It was a lot of gun, like to the slot, a lot of slot choice routes. That's what I remember vividly. Yep. And also bootlegs. They really put Jones on the move. They used him really well that 1 year. They like really used him well. And then they kind of just stuff happened. And I think that part of it actually translates really well to Ward. Ward, I've said this a few times, has really grown on me as what I think he's capable of. I think he's capable of more fitting into more scheme stuff. Like his menu is bigger than maybe I even expected as a prospect. I kind of one of these things. I can project whatever. Like Drake May was easier for me to project some stuff, but like Cam Ward, I was like, I just got to see it. You know, I haven't seen you do this. And then pretty, you know, it wasn't all perfect, obviously, this year, stat-wise, record-wise, everything. Man, some of the flashes he's shown, there's so much talent here with Ward. They got to figure out. I also think the O-line can be at least be average-ish without too much improvement. Like they're going to lose Zeitler, I think, in free agency. But like I think it could at least be average. They need some weapons, of course. That's the number one thing. But I don't know. I didn't hate this as much. I'm not like wowed and I love it. I'd almost prefer if it was like, you know, Mike LaFleur, who might be the Cardinals head coach for all we know, or somebody of that sort that's from that system. But like Dable's not the worst thing ever. And maybe sometimes when they chilled out, they get humbled as a fired head coach. They learn some things. I almost wish that he took a year off and kind of just chilled out. Maybe go somewhere else. This is just me just fanficking.
He took half a year.
So what'd you say?
He took half a year off.
Yeah,
he got fired.
He's had since October. Yeah, I know. He basically took paternity leave. I do think that it's something that's like, it's not as terrible as I thought. I'm not like, again, not wowed. It's not an A plus hire, but I don't think it's an F. I do think though, like Ward wants to win from the pocket. Like the heel scramble. He's like a pint sized Jordan Love in that way. Like he can scramble, but he's going to get to that last. Like, and he can get to the running last. He wants to win from the pocket and chuck it. And I think there's some aspects that will work, but there's also just like, okay, Dable's got to expand some of his, I think, play calling as well. And I don't think he needs as much training wheels as I think Dable might give him, but we'll see how we go from that. So didn't hate it. Also had one last hire. We didn't put this in a note sheet. This is just for me. Ravens hired Dwayne Ledford as offensive line coach. Loved this. Love this. This was the Falcons offensive line coach from the last few years. He's great. And this offensive line needed an injection of new ideas and a guy that's gotten the most out of his players. I mean, this guy morphed Caleb McGarry from an absolute bust into a guy that got paid. Jake Matthews was fine in this offense. Chris Lindstrom has had his best years. Obviously, he was talented, first round pick and everything. Drew Dahlman had a nice career in this offense before getting paid by the Bears. All the guys played the best. The left guard, who I really like. Oh, of course, the Frenchman. I'm blanking on his name right now. The left guard, too. Like, he's really come along. So I just really like Ledford. I thought maybe, you know, Arthur Smith went to Ohio State as the offensive coordinator. But I was curious where he ended up, because I feel like once Callahan got into Atlanta, this guy was going to be one of the top names. Yeah. And this is – offensive line coach is a good one. Is worth their weight in gold. And he is one of those. He's one of the five, I would say, that are like that in the league right now. And so this was a huge hire for the Ravens and Jesse Minter. So just I wanted to throw this one in because I thought this was a really one of the non-coordinator hires. That's one of the biggest. It's going to have big ramifications in 6 months time. Maybe not so much now, but once we get into the season, I think we're going to feel this injection of talent as far as from the coach anyways. But any thoughts on this, or this is just me getting nerdy?
No, I mean, it's a clutch get for Jesse Minter because that's a big part of like, all right, what are you going to do now that you're not the offensive play calling head coach? You got Lamar Jackson. Like, what's the offense you're going to build around him? And they haven't even hired an offensive coordinator yet, and you're still able to get probably the second most important thing there, which is get yourself a really good offensive line coach again, especially for a team that I think needed that. Imagine we're going to get a lot of zone concept stuff here in Atlanta, because that's what they've been, in Baltimore, because that's what they've been majoring in Atlanta, maybe more than anybody else, the past two coaching staffs. So I would imagine that we're going to get a lot of that here, which, I mean, it's probably like Derrick Henry's last season there anyways, although I'll be the last person on earth doubting Derrick Henry, but that does fit his game pretty well.
And now we're left with three head coaching openings. We got the Cardinals, the Raiders, and the Browns. And if I were to bet right now, I would say it's Kubiak to the Raiders. I'm going to go LaFleur to the Cardinals, little LaFleur. And then I would – he hate me saying that. And then the Browns, I would go with – I'm going to say they promote Schwartz, because that thing seems like a mess right now. Any
Yeah.
And who's your favorite for all three spots before we wrap the segment up?
Yeah. I'd go, although some of the Kubiak stuff, there's been a little bit of almost seeming like pushback to it, but I've generally been, I think it's, that was how I felt coming out of that game on Sunday, that Kubiak would go to the Raiders, just based on how effusive Brady was, but maybe he's a better poker player than we think. I don't know. But I'll still say Kubiak to the Raiders. I am with you that, again, if I was LaFleur, you're going to stay in this division and you're going to go like, I'd hold out for a better job, but I ultimately think he takes the job. And by the way, I think it's a good, I like LaFleur. I like LaFleur as an offensive coach. I think history has remembered him kinder for his Jets work than it. And I think that's good. I think it should. By the way, the Jets, I think, are making the same mistake by hiring Frank Reich to be the offensive play caller and potentially like demoting Tanner Engstrand, who I think did a good job last year as a
what do you want him to do?
Same concerns I think you see with some of these guys. I think the sequencing maybe was whatever for Tanner Engstrand first year on the job, but I think it was well designed and they got guys open there. You just had quarterbacks that couldn't freaking hit anybody who were they were open.
Brady
so
Cook.
Like, I mean, come on. Yes, please. So on. I think the Jets are doing the same thing to another kind of young rising offensive coach there, but that's a subject for another day. Last one for the Browns. I hope they're able to land Shieldhouse, but I am with you that I kind of think it's going to end up being Jim Schwartz too. Oof.
Just the longer it drags out, that's why I feel like it's Schwartz. Like if it was totally Shieldhouse and it was all wrapped up, it was like they lose that game,
it'd be done
stuff
by now.
Monday, and by the time we did the show, it'd already be announced. And so that's why I'm like, yeah, something smells with that, which is funny because that's what some of our gut instinct predictions on these openings we nailed, by the way. Like that was what we said with the Browns. They probably could promote Schwartz or now he's in Atlanta. Yeah, or Tommy Rees. Like they're just gonna promote one of these Tommy guys. Reese. Yeah. I would say the Steelers one has been maybe the hardest left turn, maybe from my expectations.
Yep. I would say so.
Yeah, that was the Bills one was, I thought it would be Brady or Dable. Like, it was just kind of like, I don't agree with it, but I was like, I could kind of see where this one's going. So, I think the Steelers one's been the hardest off the radar one that has happened this offseason. But at least they get a Yinzer back home. And that's apparently all they care about in Pittsburgh.
It's all nice.
Before we take our break, check us out on the Yahoo Sports Network, available on Leading Fast Services or on Yahoo Sports TV. Make sure to check out all the great stuff we have on that. All right, we're going to take our break and then we're going to come back with a little postmortem on the Rams and the Broncos. See you guys in a sec. We are back and we're going to look at the losers of the conference championship games. And it feels hard calling them losers when you make it to the Final Four, one step away from the Super Bowl, and you lose by less than one score. And one of them with a backup quarterback. Like, that's a little frustrating, but we're going to talk about them. And we're going to talk about maybe the next steps that the Rams and Broncos have to take this offseason, questions they have, any loose ends that you want to tie up here, Matt. We'll start with the Rams because I'm sure producer Stone just can't wait to talk about this game even more. our resident Seahawks fan outside. And I want everyone to listen to our NFC West preview at the beginning of the season. Charles McDonald and I nailed that Seahawks prediction. And I know you were a fan a little bit into the, you're Seahawks curious, I would say, but Charles was on that show.
I think the entire cast of Football 301 was a little bit more open to their offensive changes than literally anybody else in media.
Everybody else.
I'm pretty comfortable saying that. But you guys were definitely ahead on them being a better team than I was. So 100% props to you guys on that.
But why I don't want to repost that is because in the same every line, I'm like, well, I feel pretty good about the Cardinals too. So it's not as fun when you just talk about that. You got to remember, Stafford was dealing with the
back. I was
on
the right side of history with the Cardinals. So yes. Let it be shown. I tried to talk you out of that.
Every good take I had is just countered with a bad prediction. Oh, Bears are going to be a playoff team. Vikings are going to be a playoff team. We'll just cast that one aside. Did finish ahead of the Lions at least. All right, but we'll start with the Rams. Nice little note here from Stone in here, but Matthew Stafford has been kind of noncommittal. I only hope he'll be back next season. Probably going to be in that tank working on his back for the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. But he came through this year. He'll probably win MVP. It looks like it's all lining up that way. unbelievable offense this year. Truly one of the best we've seen in the new millennium. I mean, any stat you look at or underlying stats, one of the better offenses you'll see, one of the best run games. Kind of not as many questions on the offense as on the defense. But Matt, looking at the Rams, what do you think they need to address? How are you feeling about them for 2026 and beyond?
I think there are two paths here, and one of them is with Stafford and one of them is without. Maybe this ages like milk, but I would just be shocked if Stafford walks away right now. I'd be stunned. I know he's going to be 38 years old next month. And I know what I joked about this with Scott Pianowski on the fantasy show. You know, Aaron Andrews opens up the Fox broadcast for the game on Sunday with, you know, people forget that like Matthew Stafford almost didn't start the season. I was like, Aaron, respectfully, people who hosted a daily podcast during August will never forget that Matthew Stafford almost did not play this season. Because there's a lot of things I'd like scrubbed from the internet based on, you know, concern and panic over something that ultimately ended up being 0% panic. But yeah, you know, few quarterbacks, if any, were as good as Matthew Stafford last year. I just tend to think it's especially because they didn't win the Super Bowl. Now, if they had won the Super Bowl, maybe this is a different conversation, but I tend to think that he will be back next year. So I think we can rather comfortably live in that world. I do think that he'll probably, just like last year, want to negotiate himself a little pay bump, which I think is deserved. And I think that might be 70% of the reason that he said what he said in terms of this moment isn't right now in terms of him figuring out if he's going to play next season. Wouldn't be shocked if we're at the combine next month, Nate, and it's a big talk of maybe not Stafford getting traded like everybody was talking about last year, but you know, what are they going to do about that contract? I think that might be a talking point here, but I'd be surprised if he wasn't back. And I think with that in mind, I think you can feel pretty good about where this team is at right now. I think we can talk about the offense in just a second because I do have some thoughts on that side of the ball. But primarily, I think you're looking at, you know, reinforcing both lines of scrimmage as you always are here. But that secondary is a concern for me. It was a concern all season long, and it ended up biting them pretty bad at the end of the season. Like linebacker, off-ball linebacker, and I think secondary, those are probably two areas you're looking at with intensity in terms of how they can get better this offseason. And they have two first-round picks. They have a second-round pick. They have a third-round pick, and they have over $45 million in cap space. So there is definitely room for improvement here.
Yeah, I know. They have a ton of cap space. That's what happens when you nail a whole bunch of day three picks and day two picks, and they're your starters and everything. Yeah, I think the Stafford saga is going to probably last in the West. I mean, we just saw it this past year. It was through August. And that's also listen to NFC West preview. It's just so funny how I just kept saying, I even made a joke. I go, which is clip. All right, Stafford's healthy the whole year. This, and I go, this is going to be one of the best offenses in the league. Man, they might win the division. And I go, all right, now let's clip it where he's hurt and everything. Man, I don't know. This defense, Jimmy G might start. Stetson Bennett. Oh, God, who knows? So it was, I mean, got to remember that saga. But like, obviously, he's a thoughtful guy, and he's going to explore all options. I mean, the Giants tried to trade for him last year. The Giants hired his brother-in-law as receiver coach, and then Brian Daboll's like, why did I hire you? when they didn't get him. We're going to have a ski resort reporting off.
That's remember right.
That
yep.
whole saga, that whole back and forth about ski resorts and where everybody's vacationing. You know, Tom Brady and Matthew Stafford had to be stated that they both have money, and sometimes people with money vacation in the same spot. Like that actually had to be clarified. Oh my God. We're about to get into the source of the
Rappaport Schultz Starbucks fight. Correct. Was the Brady? Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Remember that? Right. That was a year ago.
freaking memories, baby. Who are we fighting at the combine this year, Nate? We have over a month to talk about it. We got some time to plan.
But we'll see. Yeah. Well, I'll be on my toes. I'll be like, hey, he says your source is wrong. Just see what happens. Everybody. Go get him. If Stafford comes, I think he comes back. The guy, dude, just won MVP. They finished just a step short. He's a competitive guy, very thoughtful guy, it seems like. And I think he was enjoying it. It wasn't like he was getting beat the F up where it's like,
no.
You know, we talked about, you had the great point. You're talking about CMC. CMC is the ultimate competitor. But then you talked about how it was so hard. He had the quote about how hard it was on him and his wife, all the rehabbing he had to do, all the upkeep he had to do. It's hard. It's what keeping your body healthy as a professional athlete is as much as your time. It's like just keeping your body right as much as just anything else that you do once you get past 30, especially in the NFL. And he's a hard worker. The arm is still there. He moved fairly well. His knockdowns, like how many times he got hit this year, it dropped from this was the best it was since his first year with the Rams, as far as how many times he did get hit, which is that's good. And it wasn't like it's Herbert, where you're like, oh my God, this guy might retire, you know, where he's playing with a big cast and all that. So it's not like he's looking at the system going like, man, this isn't working. I want to get out. I want to get healthy. I think he wants to come back because obviously he won freaking MVP or is about to. So I think that whole situation is kind of like it'll resolve itself, even if it will be a saga. Free agency wise, not bad. Like,
no,
you know, Tyler Higbee, who's 33, but they got plenty of tight ends on the roster. Like Rob Havenstein, who got battled injuries this year. He's older now. He's about to be 34. But same with him. They found a replacement for him that played very well, I would say. So like free agent wise, they're sitting pretty. good. Yeah, I speak English for a living. But then I just think, you know, the defensive questions. I think it's pretty easy to align draft wise. Like they can take a corner in the first round. There's a couple corners that align exactly where they pick. I don't think they take a quarterback in the first round. Or a successor, because this is not the draft class to find that, even with their two first round picks. Shoot, try and trade back and get another one next year. Because I don't, and also Ty Simpson, I don't think is like a match. You don't know, Les Snead's an Alabama guy. Not, he didn't go to Alabama, but he's from Alabama. So he's like gung ho about anyone that goes to Alabama schools. So where'd Ty Simpson go? So, you know, that's something that I just want to throw out there. Like that, he loves Alabama guys, not just the school. But anyone from the state of Alabama. So, yeah, that's something I'm just going to keep my eye on about that. But, yeah, I just think this is one thing where it's like they kind of align all right. Sean McVay is going to be cooking with that. Like, he reinvents himself, looks at Chris Shula's coming back. They need true more aces on defense. Maybe they can find that in the draft. They have cap space to maybe inject some talent as well. I also think they're a sneaky first-round wide receiver team because of, like, maybe the – yeah, I think that's the mock draft we had. Did we have an O-line? I can't remember. Charles and I just did a mock. I think I wanted to give them Denzel Boston. I did give them Denzel Boston with pick 29. So, yeah, that was kind of like, okay, I think their first round pick, Daniel Jeremiah, had them taking Mekhi Lemon from USC. So it's like they tried to trade up for Tet McMillan last year, Tetrone McMillan. So it's like, you know, they're going to try, I think, to boost up that receiving room. But really, to me, it's inject some more defensive talent, the back seven, like you said. And I think that's really where it goes from here. Pretty good situation to be in for the Rams.
Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah had the Mekhi Lemon pick, as you mentioned, which I've studied four games now of his. Rams receiver all the way. He looks like a Rams receiver. He plays like a Rams receiver, catches everything. Yeah, he would make a ton of sense for that team. But yeah, I think the temptation will be, and I think we're right to start off with, okay, they have to improve the defense, specifically the secondary. And like you said, they got to get more aces over there. I think that's true. But I also think you can't lose sight, and I doubt this organization will, you can't lose sight of the offense either, because the biggest thing you can do, and because this is a team that, we have to be honest, there's going to be some regression based stuff with them, just because, one, you know, you ran so hot last year, everything went so well with Stafford and everything like that. That's just natural regression. Things might not be as good as they were last year. It's just it's the reality in the NFL. Sustainability is a much more fickle mistress than you want it to be. But the second thing is, they're two of their pivot point players are Matthew Stafford, 38 years old, Devontae Adams turned 33 in December. I looked this up. Since the year 2015, there have only been four wide receiver seasons aged 33 or older to have 1,000 yards in a season since 2015. Larry Fitzgerald did it twice, 16 and 17.
That would have been my first guess.
Julian Edelman in 2019, and then Adam Thielen with the 2023 Carolina Panthers. All of those players, three players, four seasons, took at least 59% of their snaps in the slot. Adams slot, last year, sixth lowest slot rate in the league, 11.8% among like starting wide receivers, essentially. So he was exactly what they wanted from him. Mm-hmm. 14 touchdowns in 14 games. He was an X receiver, which allowed them to further weaponize Puka Nacua. Mm-hmm. And I think you could probably count on him being that again. But we already saw, like, he missed time with injuries last year. The first two playoff games he came back, he definitely was not himself. again, he's 33 years old. Like I just mentioned, there's not a long history of 33-year-old wide receivers being ultra, ultra productive. And you go to the depth chart beyond Puka and Adams, not a lot there. You know, do they even potentially add another tight end to the mix after majoring in 13 personnel last year? I think they flirted with Brock. They flirted with trading up for Tetero McMillan last year. They flirted with the idea of doing that for Brock Bowers the year before. So clearly, I think they will look for some juice on offense. And I think that's smart, because the best way to stave off regression, which is just naturally going to come for you anyways, is to not just be like, all right, we were good last year. Everything will go like that this year. It's not how it happens.
Nope. It's, and also succession plans. Again, the Colossus Rhodes joke here. Having a guy that's quasi backup that in case injuries happen, which is like, you can bet on Adams. A safer bet would be that Adams gets hurt again as opposed to staying healthy. Like if you're just looking at history, that's why you read history. Because I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to look up some 30 and older stats. You'd even better. And the Fitzgerald thing happened because his whole resurgence under Bruce Arians was because he became a power slot. And that
kicked into
the guy that, my childhood that did that was Chris Carter, who was an outside receiver, catches everything, and he moved into a power slot role. But that is something that you can do. And Davante Adams did block more this year than he probably ever has. But after that injury, he didn't block at all. They were just like, just run your routes.
Yeah.
Just run your deep routes.
Well, go over there. On the boundary all the way over there. Don't worry about fitting the run or anything like that.
And watch month, Davante Adams blocking. And then at the end of the season, they're like, hey, we'll just keep you out of the box.
Trust me. I have tried to every aging receiver that's, starting to fall off. I'm like, well, if they kick inside, because I've been chasing this Larry Fitzgerald thing, because 16-17, that was, I had been charting receivers for about 4-ish years by that point. So kind of had enough of a database to be like, okay, this can help you stave off that decline if you get to that point. But you just mentioned the blocking thing. Like, Fitz was willing to go in there and do that stuff.
Blocking receivers ever.
Not everybody else is okay. So especially now in this offense in particular, that's kind of a must. So my guess is Adams, and part of the reason you bring him in here is because you want to weaponize Puka Nacua as that pre-snap movement player. Mm-hmm. So I think they could kind of go two different ways at this receiver, and they don't even have to do this in the first round. I mean, you have 2 first round picks, so you could go go to the candy store with one of them, and then you could go get your prime grass-fed steak with the other and get your nutrients over here, and then go get a bowl of sugar with you got 2 first round picks in that way. But you don't even have to do it in the first round. You could potentially look in the second or third. I've watched 10 guys at this point, and I don't have firm takes on everybody, but there's different types all over the place. So it kind of depends. Like, you could go outside receiver, you could go inside receiver. Either way, here you're just gotta look to the future a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I know. Isn't that fun part about this class? Just all the flavors. That's what's gonna be really fun. Mm-hmm. How everyone stacks them. Gee, how do I make my tiebreakers? Who weighs over 200 pounds? That's pretty easy. But no, that's why I had Boston with him, because I could see him as an X and having that size and everything. He's not as fluid as McMillan was and everything. That's why he's not. I don't consider him that class. God, he's the guy that looks like Pittman to me. But he is a willing blocker and everything, even if they got used as an X and everything. But that was the guy that in my head, and it kind of matches up where they pick, kind of just, I might grade a guy higher, but that's the thing. I'm not ignorant to what the chatter is like, about where they might end up. This guy should go top 15, but it's like, well, no one else sees it that way, Nate. So it's like, I gotta be realistic about how it goes. But yeah, that's why I had him ended up going at the end of first. But yeah, we're kind of saying the same thing. Defensive aces. Up front, they're pretty good. Maybe a plugger up front. This is a good defensive tackle class. They have guys, don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying, Puna Ford did a lot. If they want a succession plan from him, they're not going to draft a linebacker, even though it's a great linebacker class. I think corner slots up is perfect for them. Kenyon Sadiq might be another interesting name for him, the tight end. I also want to drop that name for you. So he might be under the Bowers kind of reception perception class for you. It's just like a Diet Coke Bowers. So I just want to give him on from Oregon. If they want to just recreate the Oregon from 2 years ago, just draft back-to-back Oregon tight ends, because they got Terrence Ferguson. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, they're an interesting. Rams are always interesting. I love talking about the Rams. I know it's just, I think McVay's always interesting. I think Wes Snead's interesting. I think they're how they morph themselves every year and reconfigure. And it's just really cool. They're a very thoughtful team. They deserve the praise that they get. And I'm excited to see kind of like this next step every step they take is really, really cool. So I'm excited to see what they do this offseason. All right. Moving on to the AFC, the Broncos, who, of course, was not playing Bo Nix in the conference championship game in the middle of that snowstorm. Their defense, man, they were on top of it. Vance Joseph, hats off. Their players played amazing. Patrick Surtain II was like, oh, yeah, that's why you won Defensive Player of the Year. Maybe had one of the best one-on-one reps I've seen this entire year. It should be coaching tape for every player ever that wants to play corner on the rep you had on Kayshon Booty. Just an interesting team because offensively they need stuff. And I think that's where my eyes go as far as just even adding more juice to their pass, to their skill player rooms. Just a, I don't know how I feel about the Broncos. I feel good, but I'm also just like, yeah, they could go a few different paths and I would understand why they went that way. So I'm curious where your eyes, what grabs your attention with the Broncos this offseason?
Yeah, and they don't have any big glaring free agent where it's like, I mean, John Franklin Myers is a guy who's like a good piece on the defense. Maybe you could bring him back. Jaquan McMillan, who they kind of drafted Jahdae Barron last year to replace, and he's a restricted free agent.
And then he had a great year.
You know, obviously, a great year this year. Obviously, finished it off with a highlight moment. You know, the catch interception debacle with Brandon Cooks, but he's a good player for this team. So, and again, he's a restricted free agent. So if they don't want him to go anywhere, he ain't going anywhere. Other than that, it's like, yeah, Alex Singleton, maybe you could look at that linebacker room. And then otherwise it's kind of on offense. Yeah. Like contributing players, J.K. Dobbins obviously finished the year banged up. He says he wants to come back. You could potentially look at bringing him back. Adam Trautman, who played more than Evan Ingram for this team in the conference championship. He's a free agent, but had zero targets in the game. He's obviously more of like a blocker than anything else. If you want to bring him back, you know, he's a Sean Payton guy. I don't think it's going to cost you too much, but I do think they can make some supplementary moves on defense, but there's no like glaring thing I think they need over there. And on offense, there's no kind of like, oh my God, you got to get one of these. But I think I'd be open to almost any playmaker being added to this team, essentially, same. Because they were ranked 15th in EPA per play and 19th in success rate on offense this past year. In 2024, they were 16th in EPA per play and 18th in success rate. So pretty much the same thing. Like if I'm in this building, I'm asking myself, how can we get us to 12th? Or 10th in one of these metrics, or, you know, maybe even beyond that. Can we shoot higher than that? And I think they've got a lot of nice players on at running back, tight end, actually. That's the area where I'd really be interested. Evan Ingram was like a complete kind of predictable nothing burger for this team. I don't think he'll be on the roster next year, but you've got like nice players at wide receiver. You've got a nice running back in RJ Harvey, but could you get like a real deal lead back here if it's not Dobbins back, which I think Dobbins would be a nice fallback, but again, that would be like a post-draft signing to me. See if you can get somebody better in the draft
and then go, okay, bring you in May and June. Yep, I agree.
And at wide receiver, you know, I like Troy Franklin as a role player. Pat Bryant, unfortunately, just like every time he'd get some momentum going, he would get hurt. And again, I like Pat Bryant, but I don't know that he's a future superstar or anything. Cortland Sutton is an ex-only player who is 30 years old. You kind of wonder how long he can be a high-quality player. There's also moments where he was kind of in and out from a production standpoint. I'd be looking at that wide receiver room if you could potentially add like a real deal star there. And same thing at tight end as well, because I think having a difference maker there would really help this offense.
Yeah. How I kind of looked at it was like none of the guys that they had, I agree with you. I like a lot of them, but they all look like to me secondary players, secondary weapons. Even Sutton ideally is a high end two, you know, and you have another guy or, you know, just a good two. And I mean, Pat Bryant really was coming on. That's why it's like really annoying. He kept getting hurt.
It's annoying. Because,
dude, the one playoff game, they had three targets, designed plays to him
right
on
away.
The first drive. And this is something we keep talking about. It's like they keep designing plays for him. So obviously Sean Payton's like get him on the field because I want to use this guy. So like he's the guy that's super interesting of their young guys. Franklin, I agree, is a nice role player, auxiliary target type, has some speed, all that. Obviously Bo Nix seemed to have some connection with him. But yeah. Like they are the Kenyon Sadiq team to me, the tight end I just brought up from Oregon. Like this is the ideal landing spot for him. They need a guy that can create some yak. They got a lot of big guys and Marvin Mims. But Sean Payton likes the bigger receivers. But the thing is usually big receivers aren't yak guys. That's they're ball winners. And then you kind of like, you know, it's the sliding scale. Better be a good ball winner if you're not going to create yak. And then if you're going to create yak, and you can be a better, you can be a lesser ball winner, or point of attack guy, or catch point kind of guy. And to me, I brought up that yak stat the other day. I was talking about the Chiefs and the Bills and everything, and talking about their offenses. And that's same with the Broncos. They were one of the lowest teams in yak over expected, or whatever it was. It was yak success rate, I think the next gen stat is, which I really like. And that kind of is how it feels for a team that runs a lot of bubbles and screens, and Bo Nix will check things down. They don't have a lot of guys that turn those plays into big plays and create something. RJ Harvey did have some moments. But again, I talked about this Sunday night. He feels like a guy that needs another guy. Like, he is not a bell cow. He is a split backfield running back all the way. I like him. But it's just, again, he's not that. Same. He's not a 25 touch guy. And so, but the thing is, that's not bad when you just kind of like, okay, we need a guy to post over the top. It's kind of like Champagne's going to get the most of what they have. They have nice auxiliary and secondary pieces. So it's not like, oh my God, this is like killing us. Like some other teams, like the Chiefs need a running back, but like the Broncos, it's like, well, you can get away with this if you don't want to address it. But that's, what's kind of cool, I think, where they're set up. They're actually, I think next year is kind of the end of this window of this iteration of the Broncos, which makes sense too. Then you're talking about Bo Nix extension. Then you're talking about what else we need. The offensive line's expensive. What has to happen there. But that's more next offseason's issues. I think this year is more just like, okay, what do we need to get us over the top? And to me, it's a little juice from the skill players to create something. Marvin Mims is one player, but you need a guy that's maybe a little more complete than Mims. Pat Bryant is very interesting. But again, he's not, he does get some simple yak. He's pretty strong with the ball in his hands, but he's not the guy that's going to take it to the house. I think the tight end, there is Sadiq. There's an interesting tight end class. I think Sadiq is a good name to look at in the first round, but kind of a dealer's choice that they got going on. And I think defensively, it's just adding more, whatever you want to do. It's like, I think that, you know, they had Barron last year. You mentioned that he really didn't play. But it's like, okay, they could go, you know, DB. That makes sense. They could go linebacker. It's a great linebacker class, and they're picking right in the range for that. Could go linebacker and juice up the defense even more. But yeah, I think this is a big push for next year. And then the offseason after that, it's more of like, okay, what's the crossroads? Is Vance Joseph going anywhere? Don't think so. Is Jim Leonard going anywhere? Probably. Seems to be a big name right now, so we'll see. But I think the next year is really where they have more questions to me, because free agent wise they don't really have anybody. You mentioned Franklin Myers, but that's really it. Singleton, but it's not a bad situation for the Broncos. But closing thoughts before we move on to our questions.
I would just again don't totally let the offensive line atrophy either. Like, we haven't brought that up. It's a great unit, but if you decide to go depth there, and again, you know, it's a current understudy to be a future starter, I wouldn't totally hate that either, because that has been such a rock of this team. Wouldn't want to let that completely atrophy either. But yeah, playmaker, somebody that you don't have to kind of design specific stuff for, that can just kind of go out there and win from three positions either. Because again, as much as I like Cortland Sutton as an X receiver, he's basically an X only guy, and that's why he kind of comes in and out from a production standpoint. At least he did this year. So definitely, I think that's just my overall thoughts on the team.
Looking at the line, the closing thought. So Mike McGlinchey is 32. Wow. His contract goes through 2027. He's fine. You know, like, above average starter. He's not all world, but that's the whole point of this. They signed Wattenberg, their center, to an extension right before he got hurt. He came back last week. Just looking at Miners, the guard, nice, good player. He's under contract for three more years. He's 31. Powers is one more year. Bowles, who's 34 and had a great year. He's under contract for three more years, but he's freaking 34. So I'm agreeing with what you're saying. Just kind of just stating that out there. It's not the freaking Browns line situation. But definitely, there's some things that, like, I love that. I always use that term, the Colossus of Rhodes, but it's just like, that's the best team building you can do. The Bucs do an amazing job of this. There's other teams, but that's the ones that come to my mind. Just because it's a strength doesn't mean it's going to be a strength in the short term or the midterm or the long term. So, and the best teams have that succession plan as depth, and guys get hurt, and then that way Emeka Buka steps in for a couple months. You know, I know it tapered off, but like, that's just an instance of it where you just have that answer already, and it's kind of the best of both worlds. Yeah, you might not address another spot, but this is a way you can get talent without just kind of like pigeonholing yourself. So, I think the Broncos have some interesting paths they can take, but none are desperate, which is not a bad situation to be in, especially when you have a rookie quarterback contract. All right, taking our last break, and then we're going to come back with those two questions. And thank goodness we only did two questions, because because these sections definitely were picking our brains a little bit. But we're going to take that last break, and we'll come back in a sec. See you guys then. All right, we are back, and this was supposed to be the main part of this show, and that's how fun the NFL is, that the juicy transactions and the losing teams can turn into an hour discussion. But we're back now with some of our biggest questions that we have for the offseason. This is what I said to Matt. It's just anything that's on your brain. Like, just there's no exact theme here, but just the biggest questions on your brain. And Matt, you have the floor. What is your first question just for the offseason as we sit here on January 27th?
I love these exercises because I also don't have to have an answer right now here as we sit in, friggin' January to these questions. My first one is just, does the move to heavier personnel packages on offense continue/go further? We saw a couple teams, specifically the two teams that played in the NFC Championship game, kind of define this trend in the NFL now, where we're moving towards. The Rams obviously did a ton of 13 personnel. For the Seahawks, that was a huge talking point all season, how they would line up in heavier personnel, get you to match in base, and then throw the football down the field to Jaxon Smith-Njigba. It didn't quite sustain that way all throughout the course of the regular season, which makes sense. You know, number one, teams adjust to you, and also you should be adjusting as well. You don't just run wire to wire the same offense out there. But those were huge talking points for both of those teams. And I think generally we have seen war. I'm actually having a really good conversation on, not to pump one of my many other shows here, but, reception perception. I'm in a good conversation tomorrow, with JJ Zacharyson, who's done a bunch of like data work on this, how, long story short, he'll have a bunch of studies. He'll have a bunch of data on this, but like tight end route percentage has gone up, whereas wide receivers have gone down. Specifically this year, like that is how it's trending. Nate, to pat you on the back, some of the first shows you and I did at Yahoo together, you were bringing this up as like, this is the way things are trending. I'm wondering, do we see teams continue to go further down that line, or will there be a pivot point back to more spread stuff as defenses adjust? Because that's essentially what we're doing here, right? I mean, defense offense, yes, it's a cat and mouse game. Defense is reacting to what offenses are doing, and then offenses react back, which forces defense to react, and that's the cyclical nature of football. I'm wondering where in the cycle, which is awesome, and I'm wondering where in the cycle are we, and does that make certain players, this is something I've grappled with from a wide receiver standpoint, does it make certain players less valuable in today's NFL? Whereas in, 2021, I was pretty jacked up about the, small undersized slot receiver who could win against man coverage on third downs and, down the football field or whatever. But these last few years, like that archetype of player has, kind of lessened in importance, especially if they are only an 11 personnel player. So again, do we see that push and pull when it comes to certain draft prospects this year? Or again, are certain teams going to maybe go back to the way things were before? Again, where we are in that cyclical nature of football, where are we in the evolution? I think teams will tell us that with their moves, and that will be kind of our answer there. And I'm fascinated to see where that goes.
Yeah, I wrote, this was my last article before I took paternity leave, before my daughter was born. And we talked about it too, because I'm a hack and I like to podcast subjects, the same stuff I'm writing about,
make it easy on my brain. If you're not, dude, if you're not doing that, you're doing it all wrong. Okay.
Oh, you're doing it wrong. I tried to be better than that and I realized, no, I can't do this. It's something that's just fascinating to me, because the combine weights that come in and DBs and linebackers are lighter than ever, like period. In 2024, the average playing weight among NFL, and this is defensive linemen and linebackers who play 200 or more snaps, was 271 pounds. 2018, it was 272 pounds. In 2013, it was 276 pounds. So it keeps dropping. Front seven guys are getting lighter and lighter. And DB groups or personnel groupings are using more DBs, using more 5 DB looks, using more 6 DB looks, nickel and dime. And to me, the answer is, athletes or athleticisms and athletics, I should say, it's all based, the two main things, power and speed. That's those are the things. Strength and speed. That's athleticism right there. And that's what how teams wins, how you want to win or how athletes win in any sport. It's speed, smarts, and strength. And so if a team just wants another opposing team just wants to get faster and faster, it's like, all right, well, we have to counter by getting bigger and bigger, because then it's just a war. Like, there's an end game to that. You know, like there's an end game to being speedier and lighter. Like sub 230 pound linebackers are just so much more popular than ever. And it's kind of fun because in the sense that, yeah, more teams are going out of nickel, but then, like, you know, Eman Wari is like the number one example, or Kyle Hamilton. Those slot players mm-hmm. are just weak side linebackers. They're 220 yeah. pounds. So just because one has a label of a linebacker, one has a label of DB, it's just got to look at body types. But the thing is, offenses, their O-lines have gotten bigger and bigger. And because I think just the run scheme changes, which that's what using more tight ends helps. There's limitation. God, I could go in so many different paths here. This is one of my favorite subjects to talk about. There's a lot of limitations. This is the Brian Dable with the Bills thing. This is Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs when they lost to the Bengals in that AFC championship game. There's a limitation to when you run a spread offense run game wise, because there's no offensive player that's attached to the formation. When I mean that, tight end lined up next to the offensive tackle. That's when I say in line or attached. And why that matters is because you're just adding an extra set of hands. And you say, well, you could just do that when you split out. Gaps. There's gaps that are created yep. by the offense. And if you have just a huge voided gap, it's easier to attack from the defense. It's just physics, guys. Just physics. That's all football is. It's just physics. It's angles physics and numbers. Angles, baby. That's all this.
Yep.
It's all it is, man. It's all it is. And it's funny to like just always talk about that stuff. But that's why there's a limitation to doing that. All right. And the genius of Sean McVay's first Rams offense was doing two tight end looks, bunch formations, tight condensed formations, but doing it from 11 personnel. Because the meta at that time was every defense matched. Most defenses yep. were still in base about half the time. So boom, we're going to get a power run game while you match with sub. And these 180-pound nickels don't know how to play the run. And they're just getting road graded by Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. And, Cooper you know, Kupp, like they yeah. were able to kind of like, they were able to make the defense wrong no matter what by doing that. Defenses get paid too. A lot of these defensive coordinators are really smart too. I know offensive play callers get a lot of the hype, but the defensive guys are really good too. So they adjust. Okay, how do we merge our worlds? How do we merge nickel and make it look like a 3-4 defense? That's where you saw the Fangio stuff come into play. That's just a broken 3-4 defense, but with just light personnel. That's all Fangio does up front. But you just do a, you know, different modern bodies, I think was maybe the best way I'll put it. And so I just think this stuff is so cool because I do think it's just going to keep cranking up. I think offenses are going to keep leaning into it because it's a copycat league and the offenses realize this is what's working. You don't like muddying up the run game. Look at the Bears, their tight end looks, and they have two valid blockers at tight end. That's a weapon. The Rams are the number one. Even in my article before, for paternity leave, that's what I talked about with the Rams. I was like, they have so many tight ends they can just throw out there. And more teams are using more multi-tight end looks like you brought up too. So I don't think it's going away. I also think that receiver size comes into play here, that if you do want to be a slot receiver, there's not going to be many Pop Douglases anymore. Like, I think that you have to be truly special as a returner yeah. or as a deep ball guy, as opposed to Downs. You know, Downs is maybe the last of his kind, you know, like, because you have to be such a weapon as a receiver to justify playing time, because you're not going to be a weapon as a blocker.
Yeah, dude, and Downs, let me tell you, as the number one, like Josh Downs truther, he had like 500 yards this season. Like right. that from there's a bottom line stats perspective. And obviously there's injuries. That's another thing too. Is yeah, like, yeah. I have like pet theories about the way receivers are, you know, running routes so much over the middle, like our injury rates rising at that position. I don't have the data to back that up. It's like something I'm thinking about, but like, you know, you gotta add that onto it too. But yeah, Downs is a guy who like played 50% of the snaps sometimes, and he's an awesome, yep. awesome football player. Any metric, any person with eyeballs would tell you that, but it's just that archetype of receiver at this point is, even if he's the chief of that archetype, he's on the field for, you know, less than 70% of the routes in a game. It's just tough.
It's small guys have to be fast, not quick anymore. That's yeah. you have to be a deep ball threat to be justify your playing time. Because like you even see with the Colts, like Tyler Warren's a dynamic player, But as an offensive play caller, it's like, well, I could just have him and Ogletree out there at tight end, and now I can kind of get my slot stuff with Warren, who can do a good enough job doing the underneath stuff. And I also get the plus that he's bigger than the guys that he has to block, whether it's a 220-pound linebacker. I don't have to block a D-end with him. I can block a 220-pound linebacker or a slot, and because Warren is 250, 260. So that, yeah, it's more like body types merging in the hybridization of everything and rules and body types. I think it's the coolest thing. And I think the smart teams are the ones that realize that. And the dumb teams just go, why doesn't this work? Why is this not why? Or they draft a player that has deficiencies and is only going to be able to use in certain ways. And then if you ever look at my big boards, this is how I grade guys, is who can play the most snaps, who can impact the most snaps. And I understand that there's special players that are undersized or whatever. But you know, you have to be special. You can't just be a certain role player with that. And yeah, I mean, just even look at, oh God, I can keep going. Sorry, that's the last thing. Even talking about the receiver size stuff, look at all the top receivers right now. Almost all of them are over 195 pounds. I think, you know, it's like it's Waddle, Garrett Wilson, guys that are sub that. But what do Garrett Wilson and Jalen Waddle have? They're fast. So yeah. It's, you know, like that, they have that special athleticism to overcompensate that. So I'm glad you brought this up. Sorry. I could keep going and going. No, this was your question, but
no, it's really good though. And these are a lot of the same thoughts I've had. And yeah, especially when it comes to the receivers, like you have to be able to play all three positions. You can't just be kind of siloed anymore, especially if you're going to be a number one. Yeah. If you're using your number one as just an X anymore, you're telling us you don't really like that player that much, or you're committing right. malpractice, one of the two. And for any of these guys, yeah, I mean, any of my like receivers that I like in the draft, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, I really like Concepcion from yeah. Texas A&M. Like, please God, don't be 5'10 190. Please God, don't be 5'10 190. So that stuff, unfortunately, I do think matters a lot.
It does. My last little stat here, too, I wrote this in the summer again, was that yards before contact from by NFL offenses is rising. It's still kind of relatively low. I'm sorry, not yards before contact. Yards after contact has risen in the NFL. And that makes sense. Bigger backs, bigger pass catchers, all that stuff going against smaller defenders and defensive players, that kind of makes sense. And that's why you see more teams running zone too. It's because, all right, if we have smaller body types, keep these we guys need more bodies to throw at the yeah. problem. Yeah, yeah. As opposed to just winning with size. I don't know. I love this stuff. It's like, because there's no right answer. I'm not saying like every team should do this. It's just cool to see where these trends are going and who takes advantage of that. It's, yeah, as anyone that plays video games or anything knows, the meta. It's fun who picks on the meta, who breaks the meta and does all that stuff. All right. So my first question. How do the quarterback seats get filled? Because my head has been spinning on this. Teams with quarterback questions in the AFC. Dolphins, Jets, Browns, Colts, Steelers, Raiders, who you can answer that with Fernando Mendoza. NFC, it's the Cardinals. And I'm going to include the Vikings here because I think they are kind of flaunting it that J.J. McCarthy isn't there the solidified answer there. When the GM comes out, even says it, it's like, oh boy, you just took him 2 years ago. So the quarterbacks of note that I kind of just put out here, prospect wise, Fernando Mendoza is 1-1 going to the Raiders. Ty Simpson is the other name that's kind of the de facto QB2. Ty Simpson isn't very big, hasn't had a lot of starts, and also has accuracy issues and injury issues that cropped up this year. Other than that, great. I know. 1 year starter, undersized, all that stuff. I view him as a day two guy, as a round three guy, to be honest. Kind of a guy, mm-hmm. like maybe breaks the top 50, but probably just outside of that. And here he is, like getting touted as QB2, getting into the first round. I'm like, man, that's hard for me to swallow. Trinidad Chambliss from Ole Miss, who knows with his waiver. Seems like there's a judge that was an alum of Ole Miss is deciding on that waiver. So, I wonder what happens there. Garrett Nussmeier is another guy I can't quit, but another guy I view as a round three guy. Drew Auer, he's like Ryan Mallett, maybe. And then like free agent vets, Kirk Cousins, Daniel Jones coming off an Achilles, Aaron Rodgers, who doesn't throw the ball past 5 yards, and Malik Willis was an interesting name. And then vets under contract, which are like trade cut candidates. You got Tua, Kyler Murray, interesting name, Jacoby Brissett, Mac Jones. how is this going to happen? Who's going to fill out where? Because to me, it seems like more people have created a mess with their head coach and their quarterback than they have actual answers and plans for. But I was curious what you think about this. If you see any matches that you like, or just kind of like, I don't know. That's why this is not something I wanted to answer. I just wanted to like lay this out. It's like, what are you guys going to do? Like, you guys have really kind of cornered yourself into making these decisions.
Yeah. I had a similar conversation with James Coe recently on our show, where my way that I broached the subject was that there's going to be some weird week one starting quarterbacks next year. Some real sell jobs coming from this team, because I counted 10 teams to include in this conversation, because for the Chiefs, I don't know if Patrick Mahomes is starting week one, and for the Falcons, who's starting for them? Like, is Penix starting week one for them? Yeah, I mean, yeah, so it's just yes, like that was at least 10. I think the Panthers are probably solidified with Bryce Young, but I did kind of, they're like maybe tacitly on the fringes. Same with Texans and CJ Stroud. Like those guys are starting week one, but I do wonder if they just bring in some more credible veterans, especially Carolina. Do they bring like somebody better than Andy Dalton to be the QB2 there? But again, I don't really think they're part of this conversation. So let's say that's 10 teams there in terms of need a quarterback, or, you know, their current starting quarterback is injured going into week one, if we're putting the Chiefs and the Falcons there. I think Colts probably run it back with Daniel Jones, but again, is he ready for week one? I don't know about that. Steelers, now that Mike McCarthy's in the mix, I think they're probably right. He's talking apparently at his press conference today. I mean, what? Definitely. Why wouldn't I want Aaron Rodgers back here? So you can probably go ahead and say that's gonna happen. Although I still think Minnesota and Aaron Rodgers, there's too much like flirtation connection there for me to totally write that off the board. So
yeah, and too many people still are whispering it. There's too many national reporters whispering it, and that's too many. Why I'm like, oh, okay, that's live. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, the Browns, their rookie quarterback is a Pro Bowler, so we can probably write they'll be fine. They don't need a quarterback. Jets, by the way, the Jets officially parted ways with Tanner Engstrand while we were on this podcast, as I talked about earlier. So, yeah, there's a ton of open chairs here, not nearly enough solutions available. So, again, get ready for some bizarre sell jobs in terms of, no, we're really comfortable with Jacoby Brissett and, you know, insert third round pick as our quarterbacks. Like, we're totally cool with that. That's definitely coming from a few of these teams.
It's like, I know, like Malik Willis, I could see ending up with like the Dolphins, you know, because of the Packer connection. But it's like the Jets, they have all these draft picks, especially next year. Do they just like who? The Jets are funny to me because it's like, you know, they're going to go for just some stopgap. It's more like, who's the stopgap? Like, you know, like I've
well,
just
apparently their
like,
whole coaching staff is stopgaps now. It's like, well, Aaron Glenn, you're a stopgap. They pretty much made that clear. Oh, Frank Reich, you're definitely just a stopgap. Wink Martindale might be their DC. It's just all like old stopgap guys.
Oh, it really is. It's just name right. It's like, just get us through this. Let's go. Just get us through this. Let's get to next year when we have 3 first round picks and a better quarterback class. Browns, like you said, they have a Pro Bowl quarterback. So yeah. Who else?
They're good.
But like, even them, it's like, oh, yeah, they got the Jaguars pick. They can move up. For who? Like, there's nobody to move up for. So, okay, better inject some talent for that offensive line. Like, oh, my God, just could have just had Jacoby Brissett all these years and just saved us all a mess. Colts, I mean, Riley Leonard. That's the thing with the Colts. This is the downside of all the decisions they made. One-year contract. What happens if Jones has a good year and gets hurt? Which is literally what happened. So, and it's not like he just had some like high ankle sprain. It's a freaking Achilles. And it's a guy that uses his athleticism. Didn't as much this year, but he does. So,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Steelers, Raiders, fine. Cardinals are just like a zombie team. They panicked. I mean, you can see the Bidwells are the Bidwells. And the Vikings, the Aaron Rodgers stuff. I think the thing about the Falcons and like Penix, like I don't really see Penix as a great fit for what Stefanski wants. Under center, play action, throwing over the middle.
No.
And I know coaches are supposed to adapt to the personnel, but also it's like that's a problem if Penix doesn't want to,
okay,
can't run under center, is coming off a knee, and doesn't throw over the middle. That's a lot of issues.
Since you said that, and I know we're running long here, so I'm not going to do like a friggin' 10-minute rant on Zach Robinson, but Zach Robinson like got clowned when they hired him by when the Bucks hired him or whatever. It was like, well, yeah, you ran a bunch of pistol, you never got under center. And it was like, oh, gee, I wonder why. Yeah, because you want to know why he adjusted to the quarterbacks that he had. Kirk Cousins, who couldn't move, and then Michael Penix, who's Michael Penix, and like doesn't fit the, which again, don't know why you drafted him if this was the offense you're going to run, but whatever. It's like then these guys, these coaches get slammed for adjusting their scheme to their personnel, and it here we are. So again, don't need to do a whole rant on that, but that was just like because it's Falcons. That was like a little bit of a trigger there.
That was, I've seen Steeler, everyone, basically fans of teams in Pennsylvania being do this the last couple of years. Oh, Mike Tomlin wants the quarterbacks to be safe and not throw over the middle. And Nick Sirianni, this is his offense. It's like, no, your quarterbacks just don't throw over the middle. Like, I could just answer it for you guys. It's not the big bad coaches. You know, the quarterbacks decide where the ball goes. Like, yeah, you try to like push them to the directions. But if you're in practice and you run these plays 100 times and the quarterback only throws it to the right spot a couple times where you ideally want him to go with the ball, you're going to stop running it because you're just like, all right, I'll just run the stuff that he likes and make it easy on everybody. That's how it works. So, yeah, sorry. But yeah, I thought Robinson was fine. I really did. The receivers were a mess.
It's fine.
I thought he was fine. The 2024 run game was the best run game until the Rams beat it this year. Like, I don't know. That's knowing your
personnel. The passing game was awesome that year when with mid quarterbacks, but like the design, I mean, Drake London had, they completely unlocked him. You know, it's just like, come on. Some of it is, it all comes back. It all comes back to quarterback. Same thing with Carolina this year. Why isn't Dave Canales like let Bryce Young throw down the field? I'm like, okay. Yeah. They drafted an X receiver eighth overall who all he does is run downfield routes, and I'm sure he's running screens.
That's because they don't want to do routes.
Give me a break. Come on.
Yeah, they just don't want to do it. They're just doing their offense. These guys all have a huge playbook this big that has all the plays drawn up.
Right.
Like that's what. Right. Do you not think they don't know how to run these plays, especially guys that have been around football for a little bit? Like they have them. They might not be experts on them, but they have them. They have a big playbook or a PDF file now, but they have them. Yeah. All right, we'll get to our second question. Also, I last thought on your first question. Condensed formations also tying into receiver size. Hard to block out of condensed formations if your guy's 180. You know, like that's another thing because then they have to be quasi tight ends. Yeah, I don't know. I had a straight thought on that. But anyways, all right, last question. We'll make these quick because I know you and I like to chat.
My last question is, are we going to emerge from the offseason with the same kind of feeling of parity / lack of truly elite teams that I think really defined much of our preview for the 2025 season and then how the 2025 season played out? And again, not to keep patting you on the back here, but this was something that you hit on a ton in August, and it turned out to be really prescient analysis here because that was essentially what we got here in 2025. It was very tight. It was very condensed in terms of not just formations. It was these teams. It was very tight, and that's how the playoffs have felt. And I wonder just after the way the offseason goes for some of these teams like Kansas City, like Buffalo, like Baltimore, you know, the ones that everybody thought are going to be the true real deal contenders and everybody was sick of, but then is also complaining about the fact that, you know, the Super Bowl matchup is the Patriots and Seahawks. Very interesting about that there. Very interesting how people are squaring that in their fish brains. But anyways, I do wonder, like, if those teams improve, you know, which teams that made the playoffs this year fall out? You know, who are the regression candidates? Yeah. Are they big-time regression candidates, or do they just kind of fall back a little bit? Very fascinated to see how that goes because, yeah, again, I think this playoff field lived up to the expectations. It was tight. There was a ton of parity there. There wasn't, I mean, I think Seattle's the best team in the NFL, and they've been the best team in the NFL for quite some time now. But I wouldn't say they were the best team running away. They had a very tight NFC championship game with the Los Angeles Rams, who at different points, you know, the media hive mind was ready to crown as the best team in the NFL, even though they had some pretty clear flaws that, what do you know, end up biting them in the ass in the NFC championship game. That's not why they're in the Super Bowl. So really just interested after this offseason, some of the movement that we've talked about here, where do these teams stack up? Does it look like another parity season, or is there going to be a gap between the contenders and the not contenders? My gut right now is it will still be pretty tight because a lot of these new teams that emerged, I don't see a ton of, oh my God, these teams are going to fall apart. But I do think that we could see a little bit of Empire Strikes Back from some of the teams that didn't really make it this year.
Yeah, you got to even think like the Patriots. It's like, yeah, great year, everything, but I think even they'll say, yeah, it's an incomplete roster right now, but we, totally. You know, like, say, and then the Seahawks is like, yeah, they actually, on offense at least, aren't a perfect team either. But they have just done the most, and it's a very complete overall team, but they still have weaknesses that you can pick at and guys moving on. No, I'm with you. it was just more like, as we preview, that's why I love doing preview shows, is just because it makes me do the homework. And every time we were doing preview shows, I was like, man, you know, like, all right, the Bills, man, we really trust this defense. All right. You know, the Ravens. Okay. The offensive line. All right. The receiver room isn't that great. All right. But no, I trust them. That run game is going to pop off this year. Who cares? You know, the Chiefs. Oh man, not very explosive. The defense doesn't have a lot of aces, but it's the Chiefs. You know, so like every contender that I talked myself into, that's what it was. Just, man, none of these teams feel very complete. I ended up on the Ravens as the most complete team, which after a month was like, okay, that was stupid.
Yeah, like, sell.
You know, like, sell. That was such a quick sell. And then even, and there's some funny things, like even teams like the Texans or the Rams, even, I would even say the Rams, initial thoughts turned out to be true. Like the initial, what was the Rams, what hung me up on the Rams was, I don't think their DBs are that good. And, you know, they can win with mm-hmm. the pass rush, but they're not very big. So I think that'll be their Achilles heel in the end. Kind of more or less was. Same with, like, you know, Bills. The receiver room's not great, but they got Josh Allen. And the pass rushers aren't great, but you know, they got enough names, I know. Joey Bosa is interesting. Okay. Kind of like all the things that you think were going to be the weakness turned out to be the weaknesses. Look at the, these were the Super Bowl odds, and this is the last thought, going into the season. Ravens, Eagles, Bills were the co-favorites at 7-1. All of them have questions. All of them are, Ravens are a whole new staff, mostly, new head coach, new coordinators. Eagles, new offensive coordinator, some new assistants as well, and also just a lot of
questions. Have they called, by the way, have the Eagles called you about being the offensive coordinator yet? And have you turned that job down?
I did have a missed call.
Everybody else has.
Paul Heyman or something. I think Ben Solak, our friend Ben Solak, had the best tweet about it. He's like, this is like the defensive against dark arts position at Hogwarts.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's just cursed. The OC last 1 year, and then now no one wants to take the spot. It's really like...
I mean, Ben might want to delete that tweet. They might be calling Ben for that job anytime now. So I don't know what Ben's making over at ESPN, but I think the Eagles OC job will probably pay him better. So I would say, hey, Ben, take that tweet down. They might be calling you any day.
And just boost the negotiations when you guys get fired after a year.
exactly.
But this is what I just think is so funny, because then the Bills fired their head coach. Chiefs rehomed their offensive coordinator, who's still unhired.
Soft-fired there. By the way, I know, again, we're going long. Sorry. But I couldn't believe Andy said, well, actually, we were planning all season for Matt Nagy to either take a head coaching job or an offensive coordinator where he was the play caller. That was the plan all year. Okay. Come on. We can see you.
Okay.
We can see you.
I know. And there's nobody from like Andy Reid's tree out there anymore as like head coach. So it's not like, you know, like Harbaugh was one, John, and then Doug Peterson was another one, but those guys have all dried up. Like there's none of his tree is out there anymore. So it's not like you can just go, yeah, go here. I know that's been a funny one. Yeah. So
him and Solak will be the OC, co-OCs.
They'll be the co-OCs in Philly. Oh, I already saw. No, did you see the Matt Nagy got the where he's from tweets going about the Eagles OC spot? Oh yeah, he's a PA guy, so you know. Oh yeah, we got those tweets out there. I didn't get the 3-hour meeting yet, like we got with Shieldhouse the other day. 3-hour meeting, that means it's good. Lions fire their OC. Packers have a new DC, and also like their whole entire fan base wanted them the head coach fired, which I didn't agree with. But you know, they have a new thing. Commanders were next. They're a mess. Bengals are a mess. Okay, the Rams are 20-1. But what I'm saying, anyways, all the favorites are firing coordinators. And we have so many questions about it. So what I'm saying, if I had to answer, I say, yeah, I think this is going to be more or less setting up for another wide open year next year. And then I think maybe we kind of take a deep breath and then we start to see kind of this new era of the NFL. I mean, when you have 10 new head coaching hires, all these quarterbacks flipping spots, kind of feels like a crossroads. This year was a crossroads year, and I think it will continue into next year. And then we're starting to again see, are the Bears now the team of the North? Are the Patriots for real, as the Bills kind of like, you just don't know who emerges. So I think that's what's going to be very exciting. So to answer your question, I think this continues for at least another year, which is going to be a lot of fun. All right. My question as we wrap up the show, getting ahead of myself, because I think I talked to Stone yesterday. And I was like, oh, yeah, we got to do free agency shows, which are some of my favorites to do, because that's how I get to tout Kendrick Bourne and Zacchaeus and all these random guys. But I think it's a really interesting group of skill players. Skill player free agents, not aces. This guy's going to break the market, but I think guys that in a new spot might pop off more than you would think. Maybe they'll get paid. Free agency guys are always going to get overpaid where you're like, this guy's making that much. But yeah, that's how it works. But I just want to list off some skill players that grab my attention. Breece Hall. Hello, Kansas City Chiefs. Also, Kansas City Chiefs have a top 10 pick, by the way. Take Jeremiah freaking Love. And I don't care about running back value. Just please boost that run game and give you guys some yak in the receiving game. Tyler Algier, who is a pet favorite. The hamster ball, as I like to call him. Kenneth Walker, who has really come on. Healthy Kenneth Walker. Healthy Kenneth Fresh. Walker. And I also have to Nobody's give Kenneth Walker fresher. A shout out for a great pass protection rep he had on Jake Bobo's touchdown. So even though he only pass blocked three That's times, right. one of them was a phenomenal one. So good job, Kenneth Walker. Travis Etienne, again, not my favorite, but again, a guy that deserves to be at least a number two. Kyle Pitts at tight end at 25 years old. Romeo Doubs, Alec Pierce, Mike Evans, Juwan Jennings, George Pickens, Rashid Shaheed, even Jalen Naylor. Just an interesting group of skill players that I think could be even a little bit more impactful at their new spots. They're going to get paid that way. But I think these are some interesting names that I'm excited to talk about over the next couple of months, see where they end up, because there could be some fun fits here. I know you have some thoughts on the receiver group, but yeah, I don't know. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm really curious where these guys end up.
Yeah, thank God. We've been overdue for a like skill position heavy free agent class. Because let me tell you what, it's like really trying to get water from a stone when we're doing like some of these free agency shows on the fantasy podcast. Like, all right, well, but I mean, even yeah even a guy like Romeo Doubs, who's
Josh Palmer.
exactly. Yes. Ask the Buffalo. Tutu Atwell getting $10 million a year. Deami Brown yes. getting $10 million a year.
Yes.
Oh, boy. But yeah, even a guy Wasn't like Romeo Doubs, Niners, I think would be a great place for him. You know, kind of offensive familiarity, X receiver, allow them to move Ricky Pierce all around a little bit. But yeah, I'm really curious to see what this class, and not to mention too, like there's a lot of veterans who could get cut or moved, like trade candidates to it. Wide receiver AJ Brown, Brandon Ayuk, he ain't coming back to San Francisco. Tyreek Hill, I mean, he's probably closer to Dunzo, but I mean, he's definitely a cut candidate. Brian Thomas Jr., is he a trade candidate? There's a lot of potential movement at wide receiver in addition to some of these free agents where, I mean, yeah, Alec Pierce, I know we love Alec Pierce, Nate. I'm a little nervous that like Alec Pierce is going to go from super underrated to a little bit overrated here in the next few months. So that's just like on my radar.
So much money. Yeah,
exactly. Like, we paid this guy how much money? Well, that's not his fault.
It's a market.
How much money? And he only has 47 catches. It's like, well, yeah, he had 47 catches the year before you guys paid him a lot of money. That's kind of the player he is. So sorry, your GM screwed that one up. But yeah, I actually think that, again, Pierce is a really good player and better than most guys who get on the open market. But we just know if you get on the open market, I don't even know if Pierce is going to get on the open market. I think there's a chance Michael Pittman gets released or traded, and then they use that money to keep Alec Pierce. So yeah, we'll see. It's going to be a good market for these skill position players. Definitely those running backs too. It'll be interesting, the supply and demand push-pull of running back as it always is.
Yeah, and I got like Breece Hall. Like, I know it hasn't been the most dynamic stuff, but there's still talent there. There's still flashes there. Algier as well. Like, it's like Algier can be at least an innings eater for you if you have a nice little scat back to pair him with. And he's good in protection and stuff. I'm really curious about the running backs because it's like, I think teams know it's not that running backs don't matter. And I think that always got misconstrued. It's just that the floor for running backs got so high because they got so good. All of them could catch, all of them could pass protect, all of them could run decently. That's where the value got lost, was that you didn't need to take them high because the replacement value got so high, or just what you could find off the scrap heap. So, but the thing is, a needle mover is still a needle mover. A guy can still be a plus starter at running back. You don't have to invest $20 million into it, but you can still at least boost that position. It's not that all the, like, just watch the Chiefs and say running backs don't matter. And Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt not doing crap. Like, please. That run game could be so good if Andy Reid believed in the run game and if they had a running back that deserved to get 15 plus touches. God, like, that's why it's like Algier, that would be great too. But I don't know who they go. Reid likes his little scat back types. So we'll see. And actually, there's a couple interesting guards too in this free agency as well. I will say it's not. Again, they're not the top heavy names, but there is some interesting guys in the middle class that I'm curious where they end up. I mean, George Pickens is a big name. All right, We went long.
He's
though.
Getting the tag though.
That was
don't,
fun.
Don't the fan base is out there. Don't, you're not getting George Pickens. He's going to get the tag or be back in Dallas. So don't even dream.
Yeah, no. We see what that offense was last year. Running back for at least one more year. Hopefully, get the defense just average. That's the other thing too, is that we just talked about how wide open it might be next year. You could sell yourself a lot. You could sell aggression this offseason because it's pretty, there's not these juggernauts that we maybe had a couple of seasons ago. So curious where they go. Also, last little trade rumor, did you see? You see the little Joe Burrow stuff? I don't believe it. I don't think they'd ever trade him. I mean, this is the team I trade Carson Palmer. I don't think so either. Yeah, right? It's like, no. I don't care how much he's complaining, how much he's moping around. No. No, I don't see that one either. So it was just one little pet project or pet idea. All right. We're closing it out today. I'll be back on Thursday with Chuck Charles as we kick off mock draft season with a bang. We have a mock draft up on Yahoo. Oh, we're going to go over that on Thursday, which will be a ton of fun. Oh, yeah. I think we had four receivers in the first round. Yeah, four. The four you kind of think. Some linebackers in there. It's an interesting class. Monroe Freeling, offensive tackle from Georgia. I want everybody to know that name. I think he's going to be a riser next couple
mock
of months.
Mock draft 1.0 for Charles and Nate. By April, it'll be, what did you guys get to, like mock draft 32.0?
Oh, we're already on four.
So
this is already four.
Oh, excuse me.
By the end, we'll be at like 12. Oh, Greg Rosenthal from NFL Network. What? Like busted our balls about it. He goes, which one are you on now? 18? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's a day that ends with Y. We're doing another month. It is great exercises though. Then you start seeing how these markets play out or supply and demand plays out. But I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice. That's Matt Harmon. You can find him at Matt_BYB. Make sure to check out Reception Perception with these draft prospects coming up. Check out the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. I'll be on those shows in the upcoming weeks after the Super Bowl. Colin, make sure to put that on my schedule. It scared me. I thought it was this
week. Right.
The next few weeks, but I'm excited for that. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast. Watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Please like and subscribe there as well. That's where you can check out our live shows like we'll be doing after the Super Bowl. We'll also have plenty of Super Bowl content next week, so make sure to check out that. Thanks to Stone, Awesome Massive Behind the Scenes for making us look and sound good. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.